I didn't know if we would have enough to say for an hour besides, man, feelings, man. Those were some feelings.
Talking about young adult literature is not for the faint of heart. There's fashion atrocities, queer subtext, problematic love interests, and that's just for a start. But never fear, because Carrie and Marie are here, and this is Go Your Own YA.
Readers and listeners, welcome to Go Your Own YA, a podcast about the young adult literature you never knew you loved. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Marie. Carrie, what did we read this week?
Well, sunshine and self-help is done. Our month of happy summer sun in the middle of January and crafting and living your best life and new year, new you and all that crap is over. It's time to be sad and dark and dreary in Victorian London, because this week, as promised, we finished the third book of the Gemma Doyle trilogy, The Sweet Far Thing.
February 2nd being Candlemas, we figured a book about light and the darkness would be a good fit. And also, we wouldn't want to make you wait all the way through February, aka Friendiwary, to hear what we thought about the third book in this series. Although I feel like I may need another month to figure out how I feel about the third book in the series.
Yeah. Now, readers and listeners, if you haven't listened to the first two episodes, you can go back into the archives and do that and read the books while you're at it, because they sure are books. I really loved the first two, and I guess we're dancing around the fact that Marie was not a super huge fan of the third.
I'm a bigger fan of the second now that I've read the third. Like, in retrospect, I like the second one a lot better. And that's not to say, like, I love Libba Bray. I love her books. I am a huge fan of the Diviner series, and I think that she learned a lot from writing the series and applied it to the Diviners in terms of structure and in terms of pacing and storytelling.
Yes. Now, if you have never seen a copy of The Sweet Far Thing, it is approximately 5 billion pages long and weighs 5 trillion pounds. Libba Bray says in the interview in the back of the edition I have that, like, halfway through she realized, maybe this should have been two books. And, maybe I should have plotted anything.
And she wasn't Libba Bray yet, so she couldn't expand it to a four-book contract. So I think she did the best with what she had. And there are a lot of things I enjoyed about the series, especially the way things wrapped up. It's just that so much happened that I wanted it either to be the two books she planned or to go in with my red editor pen and cut out half of that book.
So with your magical red pen, which parts of this book stay and which parts go?
I think what I would have done is, I've just recently read it, if I were to go back and edit it, I would edit out all of the scenes I didn't remember from the first time I read it. So what about you? Like, what did you think? Like, would you keep it as it is, or would you take your magical red editor pen to it?
Oh, two books, man. Definitely two books. Or some of the stuff that happened in the third book could have gone into the second book, which was the waiting around for the next thing to happen kind of book.
Yeah. And I think that if it had been expanded to two books, a lot of the sensory and historical detail that I loved so much about the previous two books would have showed up in this book. And I felt like to get all of the action in, we missed out on a lot of that. And it made me kind of sad.
Me too. That was one of my favorite things about the first two books. And Libba Bray does world building so well. I would have loved to have seen more of those details here. What is here is great. And I love it. I reread this one mostly on airplanes and in hospital waiting rooms and a hotel room while I was visiting my mom and helping her while she was having surgery. And it was like perfect escapism for what could have been a very stressful trip. So it was a great companion for me. But even enjoying it as much as I did on this reread, you can see the weaknesses there.
Maybe, like, before we go any further, we should talk about the plot of the book.
Oh, yes.
Like, all these things.
Oh my god, so many things happen.
So many things happen, it's really hard to condense it into the couple of paragraphs we usually restrict ourselves to.
Yeah, or sentences. Like, I could do it in a few sentences, but I know that I will miss out on so much. All the plot threads are coming to a head. Things are starting to draw to a close, and it's taking a very long time to get there.
So this is the book where the Chosen One has to make a choice about what to do with her powers, and the Chosen One acts like a very realistic 17-year-old girl when confronted with it, especially a 17-year-old girl who is being pulled in 15 different ways by society, and none of them are the way she wants to go.
It's also the book where Gemma and her classmates are preparing to make their debuts. So we've got last year of high school. Oh my god, the real world is approaching. And this is Victorian London real world. And it is not a fun place for a young girl, whether she is well-to-do or not. And we could argue that's much worse for poor Anne, who is staring down a miserable future as a governess to her rich cousin. But it's also not looking so great for Gemma, who can't fit into the Victorian model of a good girl. Or even Felicity, who turns out to have some secrets. You know, we talked about the subtext becoming text. The subtext becomes text in this book.
There's not only the question of subtext becoming text, there's the question of the future of her inheritance and how she has to secure it. Because she will only inherit the money if she makes her debut, and she will only make her debut if another woman in society sponsors her. And the way things turn out, I think that for anybody who's considering reading the book but is wondering about the futures of our three girls, don't not read it because of that. They all get a very satisfying ending. Their path there is really, really, really difficult. Like, this is, in some ways, it feels like a lot of this is the second book material where everybody is at their lowest. Because there is a lot of really dark material in this book, and not just in the realms.
And you mentioned three girls. You mentioned the three living in the material world girls, but Pippa has not gone away. Pippa is still very much around, and she's a source of a lot of the darkest scenes in the book.
Yeah, this is not a book that shies away from the very dark desires of young women. And what happens when somebody has everything she wanted taken away from her and then is given the chance at unlimited cosmic power. So really interesting, fun scenes with her and a troop of factory girls who died in a terrible fire, and how she lords herself over them and fights with Gemma for power and finds a source of it, and It's really good. I liked those scenes, and I do like how things ended up. I imagine that some people would have problems with it. But, you know, reading this as a 32-year-old, I'm like, yeah, you know what? Sometimes that just has to be how things end.
Yeah. I think this time around and my first time around, the scenes with Gemma and Pippa were probably my favorites, followed by Anne struggling to find her own way in the world and be something besides a governess and a poor relation, and trying to do it with magic, and then trying to do it just as herself. And as a performer myself, of course, I'm loving Anne's plot and her growth as a performer and an artist. You know, I realized as I got to the end of the book, in the time since I read it the very first time, right after it came out, I thought there was an epilogue. I had made an epilogue in my head in which we got to see all of them a few years later. And it wasn't like a crappy Harry Potter epilogue. Like, it was a good one. And I was looking forward to it because I remembered how much I liked it. But it didn't exist. I was very disappointed. But I guess if Libba Bray is dropping Gemma and Felicity into her other books, maybe we'll get some more clues someday.
What's funny is I feel like when I read Libba Bray material around when the book came out, I feel like she said, and maybe this is a Mandela effect, that she said that, you know, okay, the trilogy is closed for now. Like, this is where I'm leaving them off. But now reading this interview at the end of my edition, she's like, I might do something, I might not do something, like very broadly hinting that she's not done with these characters. And I think that Libba Bray is a great one for like not leaving details unturned. So I think that if Gemma shows up in The Diviners, she's going to show up somewhere else, whether it's in that series or if there's going to be a second Gemma Doyle series.
Oh, I would love that so much.
Although, timeline-wise, we're going to be getting into a very difficult set of years. And I know that a lot of fantasy authors sort of shy away from any time around the world wars. But we still have the 30s. And what happens therein could be quite interesting. And there are authors who haven't, and I will speak about one of them later when we talk about read-alikes. So an aspect of the story I found very frustrating was that, continuing on from the second book, Gemma has now taken all the power of the realm into herself. And she is supposed to be dividing up the power with everybody in the realms. And she keeps putting it off, because she wants to use that power for herself and her friends, but she is not doing any negotiating or diplomacy with the people of the realms. And coming to this as an older reader and somebody who wants to be less of a terrible person, it's like, oh my God, please don't enact the inequalities and oppressions that you are a part of in the real world. Please don't do this.
Right. We talked about the order as TERFs when we talked about the first book, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah, I kept thinking about that.
And the Rakshana are definitely like fedora-wearing good guys.
Oh, they so are.
Like, they're like friggin' Gamergate. And like Gamergate and TERFs, like, there are two members of these groups who end up bringing about the end of the story and who do good things. But what I do find interesting and I do appreciate is that I don't feel like Libba Bray ever lets that excuse the things that they do, although she kind of does it more for one character than the other. And right. I felt a little funny about that.
Talk a little bit about that.
I did not think Folsom deserved to be trusted at any point, even if he was suffering. I mean, it's basically like, for me, after you physically assault somebody, it's game over.
Yes.
I understand that Gemma, like, she's just trying to save this world and others. And I get why she did it, but for me, it was a little hard to be sympathetic to her. Miss McCleethy, despite her terrible politics, she has done bad things, but she has not physically assaulted or killed anybody. And she might want to do the right things for the wrong reason, but in this case, like, she is assisting Gemma to do the things she needs to do. And by doing the things Gemma needs to do, that she isn't allowing Miss McCleethy to do any more harm. So I am more sympathetic to her case. It does not excuse her being a magic turf, but...
Yes. But yeah, I cannot get on board with Folsen becoming, like, the wacky sidekick at the end. I don't want him anywhere near me or anywhere near my beloved imaginary friends that he could hurt.
I would have been more on board with it being Simon.
Yes. Yes, me too.
Like, I think that, I mean, I understand why she did it because, you know, Folsen being somebody. And I think that it was Libba Bray trying to prove that, you know, abuse begets abuse.
Yes.
But it still does not excuse the fact that he caused harm to a lot of people. So, I mean, I understand Gemma. And Gemma is somebody who is very mercenary. She will use people to get... You know, she is chaotic good. The yes. end justifies the means, and I understand that as a chaotic good person myself. But I don't know. It's like if we were gonna have a white dude doing stuff, I think I probably would have gone with Simon or her brother. Like I do
yes,
like
Tom.
What happens with Tom. I like the ending with Tom. It was incredibly satisfying, and it had a lot of the humor which I dearly missed throughout the book. But
yes.
Yeah, no, I feel like Tom would have been a really good accompaniment in the realms. And also, he's a doctor.
Yeah, take the person... a really gifted one.
So, like, you, if you've ever played Oregon Trail, you always know, start with the doctor. I'm sorry, I feel like I've been talking a lot. Carrie, throw some ideas out there. There's some feels onto the feelings board.
Oh. unsurprisingly, for anybody who knows me, a thing that I kept thinking about was this desire that Gemma, Anne, and Pippa all struggle with to feel special and to be chosen. All three of them struggle with this in different ways. And it means different things to them. Gemma is the chosen one, of course. But being the chosen one magically does not always mean she feels like she belongs, even with her closest friends, let alone with her other peers or with her family back in the non-magical world. Now, Anne wants to find her way into the spotlight where she deserves to be because she has a beautiful voice and is a very talented actress. But that's something that's a challenge for her, not being like a knockout beauty, and also dealing with her status as a member of a lower class. And Pippa goes to a complete extreme. If you want to feel chosen and special and you don't know like how to do it and you've run out of ways to do it because you're kind of stuck in a magical realm and all your best friends are leaving you because they're still alive because, oh yeah, by the way, you're kind of dead. One way to make yourself feel chosen and special would be to start a creepy cult of fellow dead girls and make them eat berries and have rituals where you make them chant things.
And don't forget to appropriate all the creepiest parts of Anglicism.
Yes. Oh, fun times.
Now, what I find interesting is that Pippa sees herself as not having a choice, but she did have a choice. In the second book, multiple characters who are, you know, of the realm say she can't cross over, but she can become something else. And Pippa refuses this help. She wants everything on her own terms. And I get it because, I mean, at the core of this is a 17-year-old girl who has maybe never gotten what she's truly wanted. Mm-hmm. And maybe at some point things got scary for her and she didn't know how to stop or get off. And I think at some point, like, she really does want Gemma's help, but at that point it's too late. And Gemma also does not want to ask for help. I mean, she does eventually ask for help. Mm-hmm. And the interactions with this character she goes to for help are fantastic. And I love the way Libba Bray talked about it in the end of the book. I have the quote.
Oh, please share.
So Gemma is being tossed and turned and lied to. You know, she feels like all that matters about her is her power. So she finally says, screw it. I'm going to go to the one person who, for better or worse, has not lied to me. And she goes to Cersei and she says, I will give you a little of my power in exchange for the truth. And this is, you know, Cersei becomes a character who guides her to the eventual climax of the story. And even when you think the big bad is going to turn on her, you do not get that ending. And it's the thing I love about Libba Bray's books, that you think a story is going to go one way, and she refuses to let that happen.
Yes, I do remember her saying she always knew that Miss Moore was Cersei, but she didn't know how much she would grow to love the character. So she ended up finding ways to redeem her because she enjoyed the character so much.
I have the quote. As for what I wanted her to teach Gemma, I think I wanted her to help Gemma realize that we need to come to understand ourselves, or we can be caught in traps of our own making. The truth will really set you free. It's not just the slogan. I think of Cersei as the world's most unconventional psychoanalyst. She might cure you or kill you. Hard to know. That'll cost you $150 in magic. Check made out to iwillrulethrealms.com. Thanks. The Buffy humor is very strong in this book. There's a quote that I'm going to, because you're a Buffy fan. I have only watched a few episodes. I'm pretty sure it's a quote word for word. Gemma, you're not alone, Cersei gasped. And my hand touches metal. No, I'm not. I'm like everybody else in this stupid, bloody, amazing world. I'm flawed, impossibly so, but hopeful. I'm still me. I've got it now, sure and strong in my grip. I see through you. I see the truth.
I highlighted that passage as well because it's like so Buffy. Yeah. God, what episode is that where someone's like, you're all alone? And she's like, no, I'm not. Well, you talk more about Cersei. I have to look this up.
I'm an old lady and I spend a lot of time in my head, and I've been thinking about the things that make us what we are and how to be that, and how something that I've learned in my travels through the internet, both in places, you know, celebrating things I care about and places that decry all the things that I am and want to be, that the thing I have taken away from all of this is you may as well do what you want as long as you're not hurting anybody, because there are a lot of people who just don't like who you are and don't like what you have to offer, and no matter what, they're going to find something about you. And if it's not something about you, they're going to turn on each other. So you might as well do everything for yourself. Life lessons brought to you by getoffmyinternets.com.
You want to hear Buffy's version?
Yes.
Of Gemma's speech? She's in a dream talking to the first Slayer. And she says, I'm not alone. I walk, I talk, I shop, I sneeze. I'm going to be a fireman when the floods roll back. There's trees in the desert since you moved out. And I don't sleep on a bed of bones. Love that scene. And that just took me right back to LiveJournal and every girl having, I'm going to be a fireman when the floods roll back, like as an icon or as their journal title.
See, I came to things at a later date and I kept seeing the cookies quote.
The cookies quote?
Let me pull it up. It's about relationships. So Buffy says, I'm cookie dough. I'm not done baking. I'm not finished becoming whoever the hell it is I'm going to turn out to be. I make it through this, and the next thing, and the next thing, and maybe one day, I turn around and I realize I'm ready. I'm cookies. And then, you know, if I want somebody to eat me or enjoy warm, delicious cookie meat, then that's fine. That'll be fine when I'm done.
When you said the cookie thing, where I first went was Oz talking to Willow about animal crackers and how the monkey is the only one wearing pants, and so he mocks everyone with his pants, and he does it in a French accent. And she said, the monkey's French. And Oz is like, all monkeys are French. Didn't you know that? And that's how I knew I loved Oz.
I'm sorry if I'm really hard on Buffy. I'm trying not to take it out on her. It's mostly taking it out on Joss Whedon. My feelings about him being sort of like my feelings about Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, I am disappointed in Joss in a lot of ways. But Buffy remains something that was very important to me in my early 20s and probably shaped a lot of who I am. Mm-hmm.
That's real. Yeah. I mean, I read a whole ton of Louisa May Alcott and Ella Montgomery, not just the stuff that's still in print. So I understand loving the problematic media of your youth. And I think it's, you know, something we should all be kind of compassionate about ourselves with. Because this thing, you know, it's, we can't go back and unwrite it from our existence. It's just, you know, I was, I got some information, like a bit of advice on Twitter. And that's if you recommend, before you recommend a childhood favorite book to somebody, you should reread it if you haven't reread it recently. Mm-hmm. And that made me think. And it made me think even harder because I just reread the Alan Mendelsohn and the Boy from Mars. And I'm like, there's a lot more smoking and swearing in this than I remember.
Yeah, there sure is. Yeah, as a preschool teacher, of course, I deal with this every day. And something that I loved as a child might not be something that I want to pass on to the world. Witness The Lonely Doll, which Betsy and Kate recently talked about on Fuse 8 and Kate. And
it's really good. Go listen to it.
Yeah, go. And then read the book, The Secret Life of the Lonely Doll, and prepare to have your mind blown and your heart hurt a lot. But yeah, I loved those books as a kid, and I don't think I would let a kid go near them as an adult.
The Sweet Far Thing is a book we are covering here. Echo your own YA. So do we want to talk about the thing, the really big divisive thing at the end?
Are we talking about Kartik?
We are talking about Kartik.
I appreciated that Libba talks about this in the interview at the end of the book and kind of calls herself out on it. And I guess we're going to talk a little bit around what happens, just so that we don't spoil everything for you. But I appreciated that she saw what she had done and saw how harmful it could be. I kind of wish she had gone another way.
I understand it from a writerly point of view. Right. And I think that with the person Kartik is, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But looking at the themes of the book and the trajectory of everything, I think that there are other people who could have filled that role. One of them is Cersei. I think that would have been a really, really strong redemptive arc. And I do like the one that they have in the book. I appreciate that. I feel like it's a role she would have taken on.
Cersei is exactly the person I was thinking of when reading it and going, oh, yeah, this happen. Couldn't it have happened to somebody else?
Another person I'm thinking of is maybe Felicity.
Yeah, I can't see Felicity doing that.
See, I think if it was going to be four, if we knew we were getting more books and there was some, I feel like as the warrior, it is some, an impulsive person. It is maybe something she may have done.
I could see her starting to do it.
And then Cersei jumping in.
Yes, exactly.
That's great. I like that.
Like, Felicity has not had enough of a chance to live her life and to be who she really is. And, you know, when she talks about going to live in an artist's garret in Paris and wearing pants every day, like, I want that for her.
Yeah, and I think that if it happened, Cersei, it would have, there is a, something I'm feeling as somebody who's closer to Cersei's age is that, you know, we have to be the ones who help younger women rise up. And I feel like that is, and it's a theme I see with her newer books as well. And I feel like that is a way that Cersei could have done this, being like, I can't make things happen this way, but I can become part of it this way. And it's not a surrender. It's just, you know, having this unimaginable power just in another way that also happens to be the right thing, because I'm chaotic. I'm chaotic neutral.
I can never decide where I am on the alignment chart.
I think I strive to be chaotic good, but sometimes I'm more of a chaotic neutral kind of person. And yeah, there is the best rundown of the series I have, like, of the alignment chart I have ever read, is in The Girl's Guide to D&D. I kid you not. It is a very silly book by a great writer. It's by a woman who came from the journalist world and ended up working at Wizards of the Coast. And because of this, she had to play D&D, you know, having no background in games whatsoever. And she just kind of got everybody on board with her sort of kooky way of seeing the world. And she breaks things down. Like, some of it is very stereotypically kind of Valley Girl, early 2000s chick lit, you know, kind of things. I think she's a little bit, like, it was a shtick. She knew what she was doing, because I've read this author's other writing. And, you know, she's a smart cookie. She knew what she was doing. But some of the ways she breaks things down, like her alignment chart, I will link to the book in the show notes and see if she has uploaded it anywhere, because it's just great.
And that sounds fun.
So this is a book. It's very atmospheric. It's very, very quickly paced. It's so quickly paced, I have impressions of the book more than, like, scenes that I dwell on, like that first time the columns come alive for Gemma in the first book. I'm going to say with one exception, and that is the climax that takes place at Spence at the very end. Like, that is an incredibly written scene. I love it. I mean, I love my faux cars, so of course I love it. Yes. And what the characters become, especially the characters that you don't expect to be brave and, you know, hold the keep. That's fantastic.
It is so good, and it's so cinematic, and it makes me wish again that these could find their way onto the big screen, because how amazing would some of these scenes be to watch?
Now, I hope the BBC cracks open one of these and is like, girls doing stuff, you say? I hear the young viewers like it when girls do things.
So where do you think? No, let me start again, because I have two questions, and one goes back to what we were just talking about. What do you think happens to Kartik? Because things didn't turn out so great for the last person to be in the position he assumes. And Kartik's a very different person than Eugenia Spence. But absolute power does corrupt, absolutely.
Kartik always lands on his feet.
Literally.
Yes. I feel like we're not done with this story if we are not done with Gemma Doyle. I feel like there is more to come. And I can't see what happens to Eugenia Spence happening to him. I mean, I don't think he's going to be the bright-eyed, bushy-tailed Prince Charming that he was. But I feel like we're not done.
Yeah, hear that, Libba? We're not done.
I
want to know. Yeah.
That was the eerie sound effect. What was that?
That was just me.
Okay.
That was my voice.
Okay. Because I heard a very high-pitched squeal.
Oh, you know what that was? That was the radiator. The radiator went off at exactly the time I needed it to. So good work, radiator.
Good job. Who needs a Foley artist when you work in an apartment? The sounds just come to you.
So that was my first question. My second question is, what do you think happens to the girls? Where do you think they end up?
Well, we have some ideas about where they end up.
Do they get what they want, do you think?
I think they will, because they are not well, Anne was somebody who would give in. But I think that after a few turns on the stage, she is going to become much more tenacious. And that wherever she ends up, whether it's trotting the boards or doing something else with her incredible talents, you know, she's not done. And Felicity, I think, is going to take to the Paris crowd like a duck to water. And yeah, she's going to be hanging out with Natalie Barney and Romaine Brooks and have the time of her life. And Gemma, I mean, we've seen a little hint of Gemma, and if you have seen the same little hint of Gemma, you know that something has happened in the interim, and it makes you wonder who she has met and what has happened. And I think it's interesting that a lot of reaction was, you know, oh, how could she move on from her, you know, disrespect her first love like that? And statistically, first loves don't last, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Even under the circumstances, you know, my first partner died. So, mm-hmm. I mean, after we dated, we were friends at the time. But life happens and we move on. And I think that having a hint like that, like, that's not something that she would leave in just to torture us.
Right. I hope.
I hope. Oh, my gosh. Rebecca Sugar, who runs a lot of things, but primarily Steven Universe, which is an amazing cartoon. She said if she doesn't get renewed, she's going to end the season on a cliffhanger. Well, the series then on a cliffhanger. And I'm like, why would you do that? Why would you hurt us in this way?
Oh, that's not okay.
Steven Universe, like, hurts us in a lot of ways, but, like, that one's unforgivable. Yeah, so that's one thing. You had other questions?
Those are my two questions about Kartik and about the girls.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I was just Googling because I couldn't remember when the book Ballet Shoes takes place. I know it was written in the 30s, but it takes place earlier, doesn't it? Or not?
I think it's been a while since I've read it, so you would be more the expert than myself.
Yeah, probably. I think it actually does take place in the 30s. I want to see her teaching at the school where the fossil girls go, and I want her to give lessons to Pauline.
Fantastic.
And Gemma, I want a whole other series about Gemma in college.
Especially when you find out she's connected to the world of the diviners and the depth of magic use and psychic abilities and things going on in the world. Like, her story's not done.
Yeah. I've got to pick up the first of the diviners books and reread it. And then I've got to get all the other ones. And I think my library's got them for Kindle, so if I ever get through this massive TBR pile I've got right now, I'll have myself a little diviners party.
Oh, you absolutely should, and do it on a really spooky night. Have I told everybody my diviners story about reading it the first time?
No.
I got my copy from the Strand, so I had my nice big hardcover. It was when I first moved into my apartment, and I didn't have the internet hooked up, so I spent a lot of nights reading. And so I didn't have a smartphone then, so I didn't really have a way to connect with people except, you know, calling them on the cell phone. And it was nice in some ways. I kind of miss it in some ways, but not. So I read The Diviners all in one go on a spooky February night. And I probably went to sleep around 2 a.m. And then Tiger, around 4, decided she wanted breakfast, and she decided the way to ask for breakfast was to chew on my feet with her needle-sharp teeth.
Ah.
Like, she was trying to take off my toes, and that was not fun. Oh, God. She's so lucky. She's the most beautiful cat in the world. And if you've read The Diviners, you will understand why that was so unnerving.
Now, do you have any final thoughts about the Sweet Far thing and about the trilogy in general?
It's amazing that a book that was almost 900 pages that left me wanting more leaves me wanting more. It's like, yes. I don't have very strong feelings about this book, but I have so many strong feelings about what I want to happen after. Mm-hmm. It's like, this book was okay, but I want more. So, I mean, and if you read the first two, you're going to want to read the third. It's, you'll want to know how things turn out. And I enjoyed it. I appreciate all the work that went into it. And I love Gemma as a heroine. And I love her romance. And I love the person that she is and that she tries to be. And I'm really happy with how things turned out in the story. What about you?
I love these characters so much. And I think that's why, even though there are parts of this book or aspects of this book that are unsatisfactory, and even though this book is a billion pages long, I want more. I want to spend more time with Gemma. Right. I care about her and Felicity and Anne and Kartik and even poor Pippa and Gemma's family. And it's like, I want to keep reading to make sure that they all make it out okay.
You know what I'm going to do when we hang up this podcast, I mean, for the evening, I'm going to go look for some fanfic.
That is brilliant because I know there is some. I know that this has been a fandom for Archive of Our Own's Yuletide fanfic extravaganzas a few times.
Yeah, and by the, like, I love fanfic. The thing about fanfic is I usually want more plot-driven fanfic, and a lot of fanfic is relationship driven, which is great. I think it's wonderful. I think that transformative work is amazing. I think that people taking characters and situations and making them into something that feels closer to their heart and joining in a fandom, that's wonderful. It's like, I like plot. Like, I want these characters to be solving mysteries and stuff. That's just a personal preference. And genfic is a little harder to find. Harder does not mean impossible. So I'm going to go hunt down some fanfic. And if I find any good ones, I'll share it over the week.
Yay. So I'll come clean and say I don't have a read-alike for this book. I've got nothing, but it sounds like you do. It's hard to pick a read-alike for the third book of a trilogy, especially one like this that's, mm-hmm. you know, so in so many ways its own thing. Like, I have a watch-alike, and it would be watch Buffy. If you're the kind of person who feels okay separating what a person does from what a person creates. And sometimes I am that kind of person, and sometimes it's harder for me. But as I said earlier, Buffy is something that's important to me, and I think it'll stay important to me.
I have a read-alike, and readers and listeners, you need to stay with me. I promise it will all make sense in the end. My read-alike is the Elemental Master series by Mercedes Lackey. So the Elemental Master series is a series of retellings of fairy tales in a magical Victorian England, although there is one book set in San Francisco, and it's considered not truly a part of the series. And it's about a system of earth-based magic and wonderfully strong female characters and great romances. I mean, you're not reading these books to expand your horizons. You're reading them because they are wonderfully cozy popcorn reads where the bad guys get brought to justice and the good girls get to celebrate with tea and cake and a cute Prince Charming. I especially love the books that are set in Victorian and Edwardian England, and also she writes a lot set in during World War One, which is a fascinating setting to explore. And I would say my favorite of the series, because I think there's 12 or 13 of them now. I have not read all of them, but the ones I can recommend are The Fire Rose, which is Beauty and the Beast, and it's also technically not part of the series because it's set in San Francisco. I love The Gates of Sleep, which is Sleeping Beauty, The Serpent's Shadow, which is Snow White, and Phoenix and Ash, which is Cinderella, and it's one of the World War I books. They are a lot of fun. They are nice and chunky. They're good airplane reads. And while they don't have the emotional depth and literary writing of the Gemma Doyle series, you will get your Victorian magic fix with them.
Well, those sound really cool. I stuck with you. I'm going to take your word for it. I think that makes a lot of sense.
And if you're ever in the mood for a popcorn read, like, read The Fire Rose. It has a classic scholar and a cranky railroad baron beast.
Ooh.
What are you reading, Carrie?
I am reading So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijeoma Oluo, who is one of the editors at large of The Establishment, which is one of my favorite websites. It is, I think, an essential read right now for everyone. Go find this book. It just came out. Well, when this podcast is released, it'll be 2 weeks since the pub date. Go out and get it and read it and support diverse voices and support people who are saying things that need to be said.
So, side note, that book is on my TBR, especially for our upcoming month. I am reading Nalo Hopkinson's The Salt Roads, and it is a wonderful intertwined narrative of some very strong, beautiful women. And I'm going to use the plot introduction that's on Wikipedia because I don't know if I could begin to distill the plot myself. Across the restrictions of time and space, the goddess Lezeren experiences an age to struggle for freedom of the Jinen, the enslaved African people. The story is told through the eyes of Lezeren and the main three women whose lives have become intertwined with her consciousness. Mer, an 18th century slave and respected healer on a plantation. Jeanne Duval, a 19th century Haitian actress and dancer and mistress to a French poet Baudelaire. And Thais, a 4th century prostitute turned saint. Each of the women is on her own life journey, and the goddess interweaves and influences their sexual, personal, and religious experiences. Yeah, I love Nalo Hopkinson's books. I've read The Chaos. I am just about to finish up Sister Mine. She is an incredible speculative fiction author. Absolutely, give it a shot. Readers and listeners, thank you so much for all the wonderful feedback we've been getting recently, and especially a shout out to Jennifer Brandt, Clea Hantman, and Kava Marie Dine for promoing us and giving, you know, so much kind attention to our episodes about your books.
Yes, you are just as awesome as your books, and thank you so much for being so kind to us.
And we have seen the share stats for that latest episode, so thank you so much. And as for our authors, so for our readers and listeners, thank you so much for the feedback. Thank you so much for sharing us and for commenting on our posts. We could not do it without you. And we would love to hear more from you. We are goyourownya@gmail.com and just about everywhere else. And it'll be top of the show notes.
Oh, and stay tuned for Friendiary, which is coming up next week, right? We've been teasing this forever, and now you're going to know what it is.
Except for James, because he was not enough of a friend.
Yeah, James is no longer friend of the podcast, James Kennedy. He is now enemy of the podcast, James Kennedy. Okay, until the 92nd Newbery Festival is over.
Yeah.
Then he'll be our friend again.
He's love you, James. Really, really hard. We think he's great. Read his book. Do his book.
Yeah, read his book. And if the 92nd Newbery Festival is coming to a town near you, go see it, because it is a blast.
It is a really good, if you love books, especially children's books at all, go. You don't need to borrow a child, although if you know a book-loving child, you should, because everything is kid appropriate. It took me a second to remember, oh yeah, the show he puts on at the library is kid appropriate, mostly. But no, it's a wonderful project, and we're so happy to have it in our lives. And you should go see it if it comes to your town.
Yay. All right, so readers and listeners, that has been Go Your Own YA. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Marie.
Do something good for yourself.
And bad for magic turfs.
Excellent. Go team.
Go team.